had somebody comment to me today about how professional our podcasts always sound, and we're about to blow that out of the water here tonight, because my son's awake and he's running around possessed by the demon of two-year-olds, and Jamie, you're in your Jeep, aren't you?
I'm sitting in my Jeep next to a very busy road out in front of a coffee shop. I'm snagging their Wi-Fi for a bit. I did buy a cup of coffee, so I don't really feel guilty about that. But I think if people could just visually see how we look when we do this, they would get a better idea that we're severely more amateuristic. Can I create that word this time? Than what they realize?
Yeah. That's exactly right. Well, we're talking about the phenomenon of church hurt and where that comes from and the importance of it. And today, last week, we talked about how this parallels with a family, and we talked about the word betrayal that a lot of church leaders use when describing their experiences with ending a ministry. We just want to pick up on that. I'm thinking for the first part of this segment, we can talk maybe descriptively, and then hopefully we'll be able to get to some applicable things and start speaking prescriptively. The church, we often use terms that make us sound like we're a family. We call each other brother and sister. There are some churches who you will call a part of the church the father. But if we are a family, Jamie, are we dysfunctional?
Yes, absolutely. I think primarily because we're dysfunctional people. Like there's nothing about any one of us that's perfect, pristine, polished. So we all bring ourselves with us everywhere that we go, and we're multifaceted, including a dark side, and how that plays out, I think affects the functionality per se of whatever relationship we're in or whatever institution or organization that we're a part of. So yeah, absolutely. I think that we're dysfunctional. Then there's a level of dysfunctionality that's affected by how we live our lives. But yeah, I think we are. I think that's part of the problem is we have a hard time owning that how dysfunctional we are as individuals and as organizations.
What are some of the ways that that you're able to tell if a family is dysfunctional, and how does that parallel with the church? What are some of the signs that a church is a dysfunctional family?
Well, I think that one of the things that I'm picking up on is any relationship that's built in fear and based on self-protection as its sole primary focus of function, that becomes a dysfunctional system or a dysfunctional relationship. So fear is a huge piece because it's out of our fear that we are driven to control our circumstances. And it's when we get into controlling and trying to guarantee that we can't be hurt by the systems and the circumstances and the people around us that we, in essence, will hurt the other people instead, trying to protect ourselves from the inevitable. And that's having to deal with the dysfunctions that we all bring with us.
So do you think control is the major issue that's here, especially when it comes to leadership? Are people – what do you mean by control? Can you kind of dive into that a little bit more?
Sure. What I always find myself going back to is the first story of human interaction, and that's the story of Adam and Eve found in the book of Genesis in the scriptures. In essence, the serpent came along to Adam and Eve and said, "You can't trust that God's got your best interest in mind. You've got to take this under your own control. You've got to decide to direct your own lives and make decisions for yourselves, because he's not going to be able to take care of you. He's lying to you. He doesn't have your best interest in mind." And so that's exactly what Adam and Eve do. They see that the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is not only pleasing to the eye and good to eat, but it's good for gaining wisdom and giving them what I think maybe they felt was an upper hand on being able to deal with how to address their own lives and frankly be in control of them so that they can get the desired outcome that they want. And that was the sin. It was the attempt to try and take control away from God and run their own lives, assuming that he didn't have things planned out well enough to be able to care for them and take care of them.
So how does that play out in a church setting where there's a conflict or there is something that's coming between people? Where do you see that kind of Garden of Eden kind of dysfunction in the church?
Well, when people get scared because they don't understand the dynamics of the developing relationship, or if they're bent towards having control of the relationship or of their own circumstances or outcomes, they begin to shift and manipulate the situations, the relationships, in order to guarantee that they get what they want or are able to protect themselves from what they're afraid of. And a lot, maybe even most or all, of the forced termination situations with men and women that I've talked to, there's an element of developed deception and manipulation that's happened in the Christian leadership that's ejected them from their churches. There's a lack of curiosity. There's a lack of space available for an individual's voice to be heard. In a fear-driven system, the individual's voice doesn't have a space anymore. And people will say, well, we hear you, but being heard and being affected by what someone says and shifting and changing and stepping into the mystery in a new way is a totally different situation than just listening to what someone says.
You know, I've been hearing from a lot of people. The more that word's been getting around about our blog and what we're doing, I've been hearing from more and more people the same thing, and that is, well, that may be other people's church, but that's not my church. We're actually doing really well, and for the most part, yeah, I dig that. However, I know where some of these people are coming from, and I think things actually may be worse than you think. There seems to be a protection around even really messed up dysfunctional churches. Why are people protecting this?
I think they're afraid of getting hurt, afraid of the image of what they perceive their church is supposed to look like, or they think that it looks like, being tarnished or being impacted or being shifted. We say that, you know, that we're really progressive in many regards. A lot of churches say they're very progressive and want to live into kind of the new movement that God is leading people into, whatever that movement may be. But we really don't do that well with mystery, which is a lot of what God embodies is the mystery. You know, not that He's so mysterious that we can't have legitimate perceptions or observations of who He is, or even live our lives according to what we believe the truth is. But how willing are we to hold an open hand to whatever it is that we've held to so dearly and refused to let go of?
Yeah, I happen to think along the parallel of families and dysfunctional families, I know a lot of dysfunctional families and downright abusive families, where anytime somebody comes in and starts criticizing some things that are going on, circle the wagons time. Dad may be a complete abusive jerk, but nobody's allowed to come in and tell us about that. And it reminds me of the same thing happening when people are defending really messed up situations in their churches. And I think we're seeing a whole lot of that happening these days. And it's the same thing. It's a dysfunctional family dealing with their dysfunction in really messed up ways.
Absolutely. And what even takes it further than the unwillingness to allow individual voices into the system is when people in the system start trying to convince the people who are speaking up that they're crazy, that they don't know, that what they're saying isn't true, that they can't believe what it is that they're saying. There's a shift that happens to making the victim of an abusive situation feel like they're the idiot, because whatever perceptions they have aren't accurate, aren't true, can't be right. And so there's a chaos that gets created out of that fear, and then it gets even more difficult to try and see your way through. It's one thing to have two people sit down and say, I disagree with where you're at. It's a different thing to say, your opinion doesn't have any place. How you see things is absolutely inaccurate, or it's all really a matter of perception, and so your perception isn't accurate any more than mine is. When you have third-party people that are involved in situations and can speak to, no, this is what we see happening, that's when you have to lean on those other voices to be able to confirm what's taking place. And a lot of the churches of people that I've talked to have a history of these types of things happening. But we've tried to run and get away from it because we're afraid that it's going to disrupt this system that we're holding so tightly to that we believe represents the truth of what our church is supposed to look like.
Yeah. And I don't want people that are listening out there to hear that every single church is messed up. It probably is because every single person is messed up in some way, and the church is just a conglomeration of a lot of people. However, I don't want people thinking that I'm assuming that they have a dysfunctional, abusive church. I don't know. However, I do know that there are a lot of churches that are dysfunctional, that are abusive, and that people just stick their heads in the sand and pretend that it's not happening. Why? Because they hate to wake up to the reality, the truth of the fact that this is actually happening. But there are a lot of families that are like that, too. They don't want to believe that dad's an abusive jerk. They don't want to believe that little brother's on drugs. They don't want to believe that mom is a codependent or somebody has drug abuse problems. There's a lot of families that act that same exact way. Stick your head in the sand and deny that it's happening until things get so bad you can't deny it anymore. And I think that that's where a lot of families and a lot of churches are heading to these days. Well, we've talked about kind of describing what the issues are, and we want to talk about what to do about it. But first we're going to take a break, and we're going to have a short music clip here, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about the prescription. What do we do about it? Okay, and we are back. My son just had a crying fit here in my house, and it happened to remind me of something, Jamie. There's a lot of people that hear what we're talking about, and all they hear is bah, 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 whining and fussing about where the church is at. But we're actually advocating for things to change. I remember when we interviewed John Fry, who's a great pastor and a great theologian, a great speaker. We asked him, after all that he's been through, why is he still with the church? And he said, Jesus never gave a plan B. And I thought that was fascinating. The fact is, we have the church. God ordained the church. God started the church. So we're sticking with the church. I work for the church. That's where God's called me to do. We're not just trying to bust up the church. We are genuinely advocating for change. So what does that change look like? What are some elements that need to happen in churches so that we protect each other, so that we get along better?
One of the things that I think that you just mentioned was the being an advocate for and doing that even in these podcasts and this blog. One of the biggest problems with a dysfunctional family, which compounds itself over time, is that lack of space for the voice of the honesty of what's going on. And so I think one big piece is this. Like, yes, it's frankly, I don't believe this is about whining and complaining. It may sound like that at times, but I think it's about talking about what's really going on. And that's part of the challenge. That's been a personal challenge of mine as I've blogged, as we've done these podcasts, even more so because we're doing the podcasts, is am I just spilling out a bunch of stuff because I'm upset and I need a place to kind of puke it all out? And I would say no, but part of the problem that I've faced and a lot of people have faced is having our voices taken away, which is part of what needs to be addressed, is that's part of the dysfunctional family, the dysfunctional church, is when people's voices are being taken away. I mean, I was threatened by the senior pastor as well as the head elder to keep quiet while the whole process was going on. I've got the head elder's threat in writing. So part of what I have had to learn to do is to speak into the reality or the truth of what's going on, in spite of the even the actual threats that I've gotten to keep quiet, which is oftentimes what happens in a dysfunctional family and a dysfunctional church.
You know, that reminds me of some father or some predator who gets done with some terrible wickedness and then turns the victim and says, "Don't you tell anybody what happened." And that is wrong. You know, one of the things that comes to my mind along that same family theme is the fact that we need to learn how to get along better with each other, even when we disagree, even when there is a difference of opinion. How many families are out there that get divorces for frivolous, terrible reasons? And we all look at that and we say, "Well, that's crazy. They shouldn't do that." And we can all make judgments about that. But when the church, the same thing that we call a family, splits or fires a pastor over what color carpet they should put into their building, and that has literally happened. I know about that literally happening. We all just kind of shrug it off as if there's nothing to do, and there's a constant refusal to change or even to take a look at what is happening and acknowledge that it actually exists. The thing that comes to my mind is, just like in a family, we've got to be okay with the fact that there is harmony, and harmony comes from a diversity of voices, and unless we allow that diversity to happen, the harmony never happens. Instead, a lot of churches try to get everybody on the same note at the same time constantly. If you don't sound exactly like everybody else, if you don't look like everybody else, if you don't speak like exactly like everybody else, you can't be a part of this. Well, what happened to the diversity of family and the diversity of the body of Jesus Christ, where just because you have your opinion or just because you have your way of your opinions of how to run this church, we can't all have a good conversation about this with diverse voices? We've got to be okay with the fact that different people believe and work in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Can't remember his first name. I think it's Peter, but last name is Steinke, Steinke, wrote a book called Congregational Leadership in Anxious Times. And I haven't read the book. I own the book. I need to get into it. But the little bit of perusing I've done on it, he talks a lot about the need to be able to hold one's anxiety and not to just react and respond out of fear or anger because of the circumstances that are building up around you. I heard a quote once by Augustine that said, "One with patience prefers to endure evil as opposed to commit it, instead of committing evil as opposed to enduring it." And we've got to learn to endure the anxiety and the tension and the discord and sit down around a table and have conversations around why that's there and what's happening with it. But instead, we oftentimes go straight to fight mode or flight mode. Either I need to get away or get you away, or I need to kill you off in order to be able to make sure that I don't have to deal with the tension of the anxiety and this discord that we've got going on between us. Happens in family, happens in institutions. And I agree with you, Corey. I think a lot of our churches are built around what they perceive as the norm for the function of their congregation. And it can look 1,000 different ways, but it's still built on that norm of whatever has been defined as acceptable for the congregation and the congregants to live by. And that creates a system that doesn't leave a lot of space for someone who looks different.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll give you another Augustine quote. "The church is a whore, but she's my mother." And for folks out there listening, your homework is to remember that the church is God's plan for renewing the world. Through Jesus Christ, the church can do amazing things. It is also capable of amazing hurts. So as you go through church life, remember to be accepting of one another, to communicate through conflict, and do some basic things to make your family better, safer place for everybody, including the leadership. Well, that is it for this round, this week. And we encourage everybody to go to the blog and interact with us about this, whenthechurchhurts.wordpress.com. And with that, Jamie, we are done.
Good to talk to you, Corey, and we'll catch up with you next week.